been in the community for 90 years. Go ahead, Clayton.
My name is Clayton Batchelor. I was born March the 4th, 1898, about 2 miles below Rising Sun. In 1900, my father took me to Kentucky, and we lived in a little house right on top of the hill from Petersburg, Kentucky. And there we went to Split Rock, Kentucky. We moved to Split Rock, and I stayed at Split Rock on the farm until I was 18 years of age. Then I joined the Army in 1916. And during that time, World War I broke out, and then I was sent to France in 1917.
Did you have any training before you went over, Clay?
Oh, I had training, but not a whole lot. But
I can remember.
I was an instructor myself.
Was it? I can remember, just barely remember, down there by where the Chamber of Commerce was. I think it was Doc, one of the fellows. They'd have a bunch out in the street drilling up and down the street.
The war was declared April the 7th, 1917.
Yeah.
And I went in June the 22nd, 1916.
So you actually went in for the American?
I went in when...
Before the United States declared war.
When they went in, had trouble with Villa down in Mexico. Mm-hmm. You don't remember, you've seen it, where our troops went into Mexico after Villa, but
no, I didn't know that.
It all smoothed over before it all happened.
I didn't know that.
Well, that was 1916. That's when they wanted volunteers. We had 90,000 soldiers in the U.S. Army when I went in 1916.
Mm. Okay.
90,000.
And then what did you do then? They put you on the ship to take.
Well, then. We went to get back to where I was. I went in the Army then in 1916, and we were shipped south. We thought we was going to Mexico, but we wound up at Savannah, Georgia, right out from Savannah, Georgia, at Fort Scriven. That was in a 12-inch mortar outfit. And I stayed there until we went to France in the early part of 1918. I was an instructor before I went to France. I was promoted to a sergeant, and I was made an instructor. And we went from there to Hoboken. We sailed on the 13th of July. We had 13 ships in the convoy. It took 13 days to go across.
Mm-hmm.
And the commanding officer's name had 13 letters in it, and that was then Ripley, believe it or not, about 2 years later, because I saw it.
Oh, then. Well, where did you go when the ship over? Was it fighting in France?
Oh, yes. We landed at Liverpool, England.
Yeah.
We went right up the Irish coast, Ireland on one side and Scotland on the other. We landed at Liverpool. And we marched up on top of the hill at above Winchester, England, and that's, by the way, is where the Winchester Cathedral, I saw it.
Mm.
And we marched down the hill, and we stayed there 4 or 5 days in camp. And before we went, we went to Southampton from there and crossed the English Channel and landed at Le Havre. And going across the channel, there was five ships. We were the second ship, and the third ship was torpedoed.
Hmm.
But we didn't know it was all over with. They didn't tell us at all.
How many went across? Five?
There were five ships.
And one of the five got sunk?
One of them got torpedoed. I don't think it sunk, but it was torpedoed.
Mm, they got across.
They got across. And that was the funny part of it. In later years, my son-in-law, within the medics when they sailed from there and made the invasion of Normandy Beach.
Mm.
And he was on a ship where they run around the water and picked up the people out of the water and were struggling in the water. He was in the medics.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lucky.
Well, then what part of France did you march to?
Well, we landed in Le Havre and we marched up on a big hill overlooking the coast. And that night, I was sergeant of the guard. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, a German plane came over and dropped 2 bombs. Mm-hmm. Oh, I missed our camp where I was at, about as far as near down. Almost down to the highway.
Mm.
And of course we scattered, the alarm went out and we scattered every direction. And there was a German camp there, and I think the reason it missed us, they didn't want to hit that German camp because they knew that the German camp was located, had a bunch of prisoners there.
Well, you were right close to the Germans then, huh?
Well, no, that wasn't close. This plane come over, see, and
yeah,
and bombed it. It wasn't a big plane. It just dropped 2 bombs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how big it was. It was like 400 pounders, I think, something like that.
How far away is it from the front of the lines in?
Well, then we sailed from there. We went up to St. Nazaire, and oh, I guess we was there a month before we made a move. And
was there any fighting there?
No, there was no fighting there. That was too far south,
mm-hmm,
of where the Germans was. But we could see the flashes of guns. On dark nights, you'd see those. And we went up this place, Metz. You've heard of Metz, the big artillery center. There's where we went. And we was to take off there then the next day on this drive, and I was put out with a French 75 instructing a bunch of men how to operate that French 75 to support our 8-inch howitzers. That was our main guns, 8-inch howitzers. And when the whistle began to blow and they said the arms would sign, we left the gun set. I never saw it after that.
Mm-hmm.
French 75 was sitting there, and I remember going back into where we was in the billet in an old building, and I never saw it after that.
But you were just ready to attack?
We were just ready to make this drive. They'd have centered all others. There was a lot of other artillery centers. Them was going to make this push.
And they declared peace.
And they declared peace.
And that was in 1918.
That was 1918, November 11, 1918.
Uh-huh. And then how long did you stay over there?
Well, we stayed there till January. I'll be February the 11th. We went back down to...
That's the next year, though, 1919.
1919. Uh-huh. We went back down to this seaport town. So I said in the beginning we went to St. Nazaire. It wasn't, because St. Nazaire was a place we went back down to when the war was over and stayed there a while till our ship came and caught us, and we sailed from there home.
Uh-huh.
But when we went...
Okay.
Then we went, my outfit, the ones from Fort Scriven, all of us went, that outfit went back to Fort Scriven, but the draftees was all shoved out there and sent to different places. We had a bunch of them from Wheeling, West Virginia, some from Ohio. They were different places.
They kept the draftees in for a while, I guess, huh?
Well, they didn't stay too long, though. No. Well, in February, that's mm-hmm. when they, in our outfit, I don't know about the others, mm-hmm. but our outfit, they began to shove them out. And we went back to Fort Scriven, and I went into an outfit there, was put in for duty, and I did duty there in this outfit till in I think it was in June, something like that, I applied for discharge. I was supposed to serve another year on reserve, on active duty.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied for discharge, and Harry McMullen signed the papers and got me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home then. July the 1st, 1919, I arrived over here at the station.
Railroad station.
And the fireman was having a picnic over at the park on July the 4th. And I was going with Millard McClellan. You remember Millard McClellan married Borgie?
Oh, yeah.
I was going with her at the time, and we went over there. And while we were there, a young fella come in, held up the beer stand there in the roundhouse, and took $300 or $400 and disappeared. We found out the next day that he came in on one of the interurban cars. There's one each hour, see?
Yeah.
Come in on one, come over there and robbed the place, and went back on the next, and they never did get him. Now, there's very few people in this city remembers that. There might be a few, you know, but I remembered well. So Laura then from the farm and got a job with the old wheel works. Al Shutters was the superintendent, and he gave me a job because he knew my family well.
And then that's when you was making wheels for the cars.
We're still making wheels for cars. They were making wooden rims at that time. And we continued there, and the wheel works went under. Oh, I don't know. I guess I worked there a year or so.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
Remember what year?
You said they made the wooden wheels, but they put some kind of rubber on later.
They made wooden wheels.
Yeah.
And then there was a metal rim put on it with a flange around one side.
Yeah.
Then this rubber was put on a clincher tire. Did you ever see a clincher tire?
Yeah.
A clincher, they put them on, but the kind for Oakland and Buick, it was a little different. They just slid it on and put the bolted it, see?
Uh-huh.
But a clincher tire, they were made different.
They forced them on. But
the clincher was forced on, but that's all. The rubber tire went right on the clincher.
Yeah.
And the clincher had a little
notch like there, wasn't
it? Well, notch all the way around it.
And
the
tire, huh?
Just like a bicycle, you put it on.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way the clincher was. Well, that's when we make money, because they weren't particular on that. But the other, they weren't particular.
So you worked at the tool works for about...
Wheel
works for about a year.
Then
where'd you go?
Well, I didn't do anything for a while, and I was a cook in the Army for a while.
Yeah.
And I decided I'd go in the bake shop, and I learned to be a baker.
Were you married at that time?
No, I never got married in 1923.
Oh, uh-huh.
But I went in the bakery, down at the old Durbin Bakery.
Well, weren't you in with Slick or something there on Main Street for a while?
Well, later, Slick Lambert and I started a bakery on Main Street.
That was after the bakery.
That was after the Durbin Bakery went under.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, tell me about the Durbin Bakery.
Well, the Durbin Bakery was going good, and the man from Lawrenceburg took over. Ike Everhart was the man that I got a job under, and I've still got a letter where he recommended me to the government for a pension. But he got out of it, and another fellow named Oppen, he was a chemist up at the flour mill, Lawrenceburg Roller Mill, and he took over, and it wasn't but a short while, him and I got to know each other pretty well, and he saw what I could do, and he made me manager.
You had several trucks running, too.
Oh, yes, we had.
How many trucks you had?
Five or six, I guess. And he made me manager. But he wanted to do it in a big way, and he went out to buy an equipment, $30,000 for a machine, this or that, and we couldn't make the payments after he bought it. Well, what happened? We had all those trucks and no money to keep them up because it was taking all the money to make the payments. And I told Speckman, Speckman had the garage over there where Pope's is now.
Yeah, down by the old wagon bridge.
I told Speckman, I said, something's going to happen, you better look out. So Speckman took me at my word and closed the doors. Wouldn't let him take the trucks out. We went under, and Slick Lambert and I was made receivers. Yeah, we were appraisers, I guess it was.
Yeah, probably.
We were appraisers. We didn't get nothing, only $3 a piece, I think.
And
then Slick and I went together. Well, before that, I went to Dillsburg, started working the bakery out there. A fella had it. But I couldn't get, I got the machine I wanted, but they didn't have a three-phase electric out there.
Yeah.
And I got this machine, I had to ship it back, it was a mixer.
Who run electricity out there? Was that a local man here? And you went to Cincinnati after the bakery. Okay.
I went to Cincinnati and got a job at Laughlin. I worked there for a couple of months. Then from there I went to Covington and worked there about 2 months. But that was after I married there. Then I come back to Aurora and went to work back in the old Irvin Bakery where I'd started. But this was before one other, in between, see.
Uh-huh.
And I worked there, and while I was there the second time was when I was made manager, then it went under. And Slick Lambert and I then started a bakery on Main Street.
What else was going on in Aurora then? You said the chair factories?
Oh, you had the... At that time, they had the wooden shoe. They made chairs, didn't they?
Yeah,
I think it was chairs.
Yeah.
And they had the Indianapolis chair.
Cochran chair.
The Cochran chair. And the casket company, that was right in Aurora.
How about the foundry?
The foundry was in Aurora.
Was anything going over there where the wheelworks was then, or was it closed down?
No, that was shut down for a while, then the box factory started a box factory there.
Fiber Reed was in there.
Fiber Reed.
That was for the box factory.
That was before the box factory.
Uh-huh. Then they went down, and then the box factory. How many, was there quite a few stores in town then?
Oh yes, quite a few saloons too.
Yeah, saloons used to...
Well, I can remember...
That's
the stores. They were starting up at the head of 3rd Street where Lackerman is now. There was one there. And down 3rd Street.
What was there where the old laundry was for a while? That was a grocery in there, wasn't it?
Right on
3rd Street there.
Right across from there was just... Frank Cox had a store.
Yeah.
But down on 3rd Street, there was Pelzin had a store down there where that Pure Oil Company is on the corner.
Yeah.
And Teeny's had their store there where the saloon is.
Yeah, on what street is it? That's Decatur?
Judiciary
Street, yeah.
And then on 2nd Street.
Was there a hotel up there at the end of the street or something?
Yeah, it was a hotel.
Well, let's see, where the public service is now, that was some kind of a garage, wasn't it?
Well, that was a garage.
Sold some kind of
garage. Hoogerman's and recruited in Linkmar.
They sold some kind of cars.
I bought a Chevrolet from them.
Did you?
It wasn't a new one, but I bought one.
And then...
That's Clarence's grandfather. Freddie's grandfather.
Then, Kumar had a place there where the printing place is now, and the power...
He had a hardware store there.
Yeah? You remember when the fireworks went off?
No, I don't...
That's what burnt the building down some way. He had fireworks.
I don't remember that.
And somebody got them lit some way and it burnt the building down. And that's when they built the Palace Theater.
That's why I can't remember. I remember the Palace Theater one. Well, they had a fire in the palace, too.
Yeah, later. That's about that time Kabikoff's come in. Hey, it started a dry cleaning place.
And well, Cabby was way down there on the corner of the alley.
Yeah. And his brother, Herman, he did shoe repairing. Let's see, where was that? That was...
I don't remember.
That was...
Gus Guido had a shoe repair place.
Yeah. And Herman Kabikoff was up... He was up about where... must be along there where Dick Mattingly or someplace right in there where they shine shoes for 10 cents. And
I don't remember.
He was a brother of Isaac, one of the dry cleaners.
Got food all the way down Second Street there.
And then there was, at that time, there was some grocery stores on Second Street.
Oh, yeah, there was. Cy Conaway had a grocery on Second Street. And Hertigan had one up on the corner.
Yeah, he sold cars. He had flyers.
Hertigan?
Yeah.
Well, he had a grocery.
Did he sell? He had a grocery too?
I think he had a grocery.
Where was that? Say.
And there used to be a Chinese laundry right in there where Wunderlich's.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Store.
I didn't remember.
I remember Chinese laundry.
Uh-huh.
And Frank's Bakery. That's where. I worked for Mr. Huff there.
Yeah, Huff's Bakery.
I worked in Lawrenceburg.
Can you remember when the
outside of the school building, I was policing that building at a game, and he come right over us and showed the place the light down.
He had his landing lights on.
And he made that circle and bloom, and I said, Bob, something happened.
Yeah.
About 5 minutes later, we heard that he didn't make the hill. He got below.
Yeah, that was Bob Frank and his mother. They said his mother was standing out on Second Street. They lived upstairs.
Yes, sir.
And they said she heard that crash, and she just turned around and walked back upstairs. She just about sure that what happened.
Oh, yeah, we knew it right away.
You could hear it.
We heard it there. We was out in the yard. We even went out. Bob always liked to take a smoke.
Yeah.
And he'd go out in the yard and smoke. It wasn't loud smoke inside the school building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went out there right away, and what had happened, he went out there and went to turn, and when he went to turn, that one wing dropped down, see? And when he would have cleared the trees, only when that wing dropped down, why that hit in the trees, and he just went right down through a thicket there.
Locust,
the motor was ahead. I was up there when he took the orders out of his pocket. He was just limp. I didn't see him bleeding or anything, but he was just limp. And they took the orders out and found out where he'd came from, and then they went down and called in that he'd crashed. But the old motor, after those wings and everything hit the tree, you know, the motor flew right out of the front end. It was 15 or 20 feet ahead of the plane.
I never went up till the next morning.
Uh-huh.
They'd picked up everything. A few scraps laying around.
When quite a few boats went up and down the river, and
I can remember to begin with, In 1915, Wyman Brazier lived like his parents lived below us 2 or 3 miles. You know, I mean, he called me and wanted to know. He was captain of the Catherine. You've heard of the run from Vivi to Cincinnati. He'd go up one day and come back the next. Mm. And he called me and he's at home from somewhere down the river there, wanted to know if I wanted a job. And I wasn't doing anything. I said, yes. Well, they said, be down the river. We'll be up there in such a time. We'll stop and pick you up. So I got some clothes together, went down, they picked me up, and I guess I worked on that boat 2 or 3 weeks and run back and forth from Cincinnati.
You just lived on the boat then?
Lived right on the boat. And Turner, I believe, was... Wyman was a pilot. That's... Right, and Turner's owned the boat, Turner Brothers, and their mother was a cook.
Yeah. And what did they haul mostly?
Anything.
Cattle and stuff like that?
We didn't have many cattle, calves, but they hauled anything, and hay, any kind of freight.
Yeah.
But while I was on that, I got to know Wyman pretty well. We went to the pilot house when there's in between places, nothing to do, and there was two of us, he let us take the wheel and steer that boat. Mm-hmm. And many times I steered that boat down the river, one time down below Vivi, somewhere there, it was dark, and I had the wheel, and I thought I was right, I looked over. I wasn't 100 feet from the shore. I guess I hollered Wyman, and he woke up right quick and grabbed the wheel and took her back to the center of the river. I said, Vivi is down around paper someplace.
Yeah.
It was two of us, and he sort of took a liking to her, and he let it turn the boat pilot. Now the one boy, he knew more about it than I did. He let him make a landing, but he never would let me make a landing. I could have made it, but...
Did you always land upstream?
Yeah, well, it's...
Turned around. There was more current in the river then days.
So this...
And they'd always light upstream because you could land better.
But this other boy, I've got a picture of him. Him and I went up to Cincinnati and stayed up there overnight on the boat, and then we go up in town. I got a picture of him and I someplace here where we had taken up in town.
I remember we used to get on Sundays and go down on one boat down to...
Well, now that was a big boat. The Catherine wasn't so big. That was just a big... It was run by a diesel oil. It was a stern wheel.
Well, they used to go down, I don't know, about VV and turn around and come back.
I made that trip too.
And they'd pick up freight. I remember one time, I think it was maybe at Warsaw, they had some hogs to load and had them fenced in there on the bank, and when they started to get on the boat, the dirt and hogs got loose in those willows. And those black fellows was chasing them around, and them hogs was a-screaming. Yeah, boy, there's a lot of noise, but they finally got them and got them on the boat.
We used to ship on the Lizzie Bay, the Levi J. Workham, and there was one other boat, Packet, we called them, mm-hmm. And they would land. Oh, I'd take the night, we'd take a lantern and wave it, and they'd throw the spotlight on in. And they'd land, they'd see what you had. Well, it was during watermelon time, and we shipped something, and the brother-in-law, I'll never forget it, I had some watermelon down. I know those Negroes always want watermelons. And I don't know how many watermelons we sold. And they said, now, they bought some, and said, now, we'll pick these up when we get through unloading. Put them right in the place. And I said, that's fine. Well, I left, and somebody else come along. My brother-in-law was there. He didn't know about it. It wasn't anything to jip anybody. They wanted to buy those melons. They sold them.
And sold them again.
Sold them again. And the niggers come out and want to know where the watermelons were, and they were gone. Well, I didn't know anything about it. We had a heck of a time. But my brother-in-law didn't know it either. He thought,
do you remember? Did you have to give them their money back?
I don't remember whether they got the money back. Maybe we did. But I didn't know anything about it. The laughter is all over with. The brother-in-law, he said, well, he didn't know they was sold, and he sold them again.
Well, depression.
I didn't have a job for a while during the Depression. Then I went to the Durbin Bakery, and I worked there 60 hours a week for $30.
Mm-hmm.
But I started right after the Depression started. But before that, I was out of a job for a while, and I shoveled coal for old Durbin. You've heard of old Durbin? Used to drive a cart.
You had a horse and wagon?
Had a coal cart.
I don't remember that.
Well, you don't remember the four-wheel
drive. When did Hans and them get in bed?
Job at a Durbin Bakery. And I worked the night shift. Bill Armstrong and I worked the night shift and worked 60 hours for $30.
Well, he was in school and he died pretty young, didn't he?
He wasn't a finer fellow living.
Yeah, I always liked it. He raised the rest of those kids. His dad, I don't know what happened to his dad.
His dad died of natural death, I think. He used to drive the garbage truck.
And
had an old cart.
Bill wasn't very, he was probably about 16 or something when his dad died, and then he...
No, he was older than that, because him and I worked together a night shift. And all the time we worked together, I don't know how long, we never had a word, cross word. If Bill had something that he couldn't do right away, he'd ask me and I'd do it. If I wanted something, we'd become very close. There wasn't another Armstrong that liked that.
See, they had quite a few kids, and he was the only one working there at first.
I don't know. There was Ed. That Ed, he was something.
Well, Bill was the oldest one. Ed and Nate and...
Lee
and... I don't really know how many there was, but when their father died...
Bill was the only one that I think that I really liked.
Uh-huh.
Old Nate was all right, I guess. I see him every now and then, but he wasn't like Bill.
No, Bill was quiet.
He was nice. He was good. We never had no trouble. We'd dig in there with only two of us. We'd run, get all the dough set for next morning, ready to run it into bread, and then we'd make the rolls. Sweet stuff of the night.
What time would trucks start out in the morning?
Oh, they start out about 7 o'clock.
Oh, I thought maybe they start out earlier.
No, they come about 6 and loading.
Yeah.
Ronnie Brownhopper used to drive a truck.
Oh, did he?
I offer the record. We got into a crap game up there one morning. Brownie, I strapped the old buns. I got lucky, and Brownie had to borrow money to go out on the route. He didn't have no change. Who was it? Ricey, Charles Rice, you remember him?
The ones that had the piano?
Yes, yeah. The boy. He grabbed the dice and threw the dice away. He was shooting crap, that's what it was.
Yeah, that was another thing they had, this piano store. They had that piano business for crap.
Harris and Charles worked there at the bakery together, and old Charles and I got along all right, but Harris, I didn't think so much of him. He almost got me canned there.
And about that time, I know they had different kinds of cars. And the Island, they called the one the Island, and the Essex. Ernie Welch, did you know him?
Yes.
He got a new Essex, and his folks and my folks used to go places together. And we was in the car going to Lawrenceburg. That was a gravel road then. And he had this new excess. He just got it. And his wife was along, but we kept kidding him how fast it'd go. We'd want to go faster. And he got going a little faster, and he got that thing up to 45 miles an hour, and his wife was in the back seat and screaming. He had to slow down because he was going forward.
I owned one. I bought it from Mars Brothers.
Did you?
But
he got going 45 miles an hour, and that was too fast. That one, the old streetcar, that bridge there, Wilson Creek, was real narrow.
Yes.
Because the streetcar come across the same bridge, and I don't think two cars could pass on there.
I remember the bridge. It was right
over Wilson.
That was right straight. The old road.
Yeah, it was on the old road, and there was a kind of angle in there,
yes,
too, so
I
you couldn't get on there. Two cars couldn't because they had to turn.
No, I bought this Essex from Joe Mars, and they said, oh, it'll never start, never start. And I parked out in front of my house then when I lived on Combo Street, right across from Mars' grocery.
Yeah.
And I go out there and zero weather and then start right up, and they just couldn't understand.
Did you have several spare tires strapped on?
Oh, yeah, I had a couple of tires.
And whenever you took a ride in those days, you always had one or two flat tires. And then I remember we'd get out someplace, and there's so darn many mud roads along the creek. You'd get stuck in the mud, and everybody'd have to get out and push. And the old Model T Ford.
That was later years. We went up there, Tom Ward and I, and Tom was in his prime, we run together a lot. We went to police, meeting up at the police barracks up there on Wilson Creek.
Yeah.
Tom backed up and backed into a mud hole, we couldn't get out, and they had to come out a bunch of police. Shut us out.
Get it out of the mud hole.
Get it out of the mud hole.
My dad's telling about one time they went up to Cincinnati. I don't know what they went to. It was him and Clayton Ritter and Llewellyn Davies. I don't know, one or two more. Anyway, they'd had, I think coming down from Cincinnati, they'd already had two flat tires and didn't have any more spares. And Llewellyn Davies said, if that you have one more flat tire, I'm going to get out and walk. And right there by Wilson Creek someplace, bang went a tire. And he got out and started walking. And Dad said the tire wasn't any good anyway, so he just decided, he said, we'll just ride in on the flat, on that flat tire. So
you don't remember what drive he did.
The one that had the barber shop was
out. No. I don't know whether there's any relation. He went up Detroit or somewhere from Aurora, and he was a gambler, and he was always getting in trouble. I got him out of trouble once, and I loaned him money, and he never did pay it back.
Is that the one whose girl married, what was the mayor up there in Orangeburg? What was the name of?
I don't know who Watt's daughter married. Well, anyway, Ernie Borgman and I was working together over the wheel works. So, you know old Ernie.
Yeah.
He's dead now, and Watt Drivey worked there, and we wanted to buy a suit of clothes, so I had the car. They didn't have a car, and we drove to Cincinnati. And it said, the law was, never pass a streetcar on the right. Coming down right up below Cincinnati there, a streetcar was coming along. It was stopped. Then it go on. I said, I'm going to take a chance and go around that car on the right. And I did. And just as I got around the car, a cop stepped up to the door of the tavern down there, and I said, uh-oh, there's a cop. He'll get us. And Ernie and Watt said, keep going, we'll pay the fine if he comes after us. Well, he didn't have any car. If he did, it must have been parked someplace. So I tramped on, and away we come for home. And I went around back on the right, and that was strictly against the law.
It was, well, it was stopped.
People got out always on that side of the car.
Yeah.
Oh, Ernie, Ernie and I talked about that more than once. And Rod Grivey, he was always giving cold checks. And the last one, I loaned him money to pay off a cold check to the bank. They was going to prosecute him or something because two or three happened, and I loaned him money. And he went out of town, and I never did see him after that. And I don't know how much money it was. That was something.
Who was a big fat fella, Sam somebody?
Sam Lewis?
Oh, yeah, Sam Lewis.
Oh, yes, old Sam.
Old Sam, they told about one time they was going up there in Cincinnati, and they did something that was against the law, and this policeman got after him, and he said, where do you think you're going? And well, they said, old Sam was in the back and said, well, we thought we was going to a moving picture show. I don't know whether they gave him a ticket or not, but you know, all that bunch, they used to have these minstrel shows. Oh, him and...
You ever heard him tell that man on Cobb? What's his name?
Mac Cobb?
Max Cobb.
No, I don't think so.
A bunch of them took him up there one time. Cincinnati, and they took him in one of those sporting good places where they had girls, and one girl went to monkey around the old Cobb, Max. Max said, get away from me, I'm decent.
Now, old Mac was pretty smart, you know. They said he used to set type for his...
Well, yeah, he was good.
Uh-huh.
And he'd come to church regular on Sunday morning, brother in class. He'd go in that telephone, call him up and tell him he arrived safe every Sunday morning.
He'd tell his sister, call her up every so often so she knew where he was.
She'd call his sister.
And then he sold Saturday Evening Posts. And I'd say, what are they featuring in there this month, Mac? And my gosh, he could read all them titles off just as good as a college professor.
He used to deliver papers or put them out or something. And right here where Ed Powell is, right on the line, right on the corner, they had one of those toilets the government put in, you remember?
Yeah.
And that was Happy Jennings lived there, and he had it. And Mac always stopped in that when he come along. And he went in there, and he come out, and he started out. And he went back, opened the door, and looked, and he come back again. He said, I know I had it when I went in there. He went talking out loud. I was on my porch. I lived in that little sugar cottage where Armstrong lived. Kept saying, I know I had it when I went in there. I know. And I said, Mac, what's wrong? He said, I had it when I went in there. My hat's gone. My hat's gone. And he went up, went right on over across the little yard there to Mrs. Ruble and told Mrs. Ruble he lost his hat there in the toilet. And she gave him an old one that Bill had.
That was one of them old PTA toilets, wasn't it?
Yes, I can say it. I know I had it when I went in there. I know I had it.
Yeah, and they would all tease him when he'd drive for the express company, I guess it was. He'd deliver that stuff. And then when he'd deliver bills for anybody, by gosh, he'd walk up every stair and put it right there in the door.
Right
back. Boy, well, them guys, you know, old... Colton used to carry coal up. He'd carry, like out Conwell Street, he'd carry that from there. They'd just dump it on the sidewalk, and he'd carry it up and clear around the house and back for a quarter a bucket. 50 cents a ton.
Yeah.
50 cents a ton. Boy.
I know they used to do that out there. That's why I got out of Commonwealth Street.
And like George Stevens lived on the third floor there on 2nd Street, he'd carry a ton up there for 50 cents.
I lived out there, I don't know how many years.
Steve Calton did that, 50 cents a ton.
I got out of there.
The gas has been a lifesaver to them. See, most of them got gas now, and they don't have to carry that coal up, but that was a heck of a job.
Too much to carry me, and I, old Mrs. Henman, she built this little house down there where Armstrong lived for Lee Ruble. Lee owned it, but she, I understand she put the money in it, or she took it over when Lee didn't want it anymore. She wanted back on Commonwealth Street. Mm. And she come to me and said, I'll trade you that new house for your house. Well, that was an old house out there. Mm. It was a regular shell. Huff owned it, and I bought it from them for $2,000. And winter time, when nearly froze. Well, anyway, I sold it to him, or traded with her, and come over here, and I'm trying to think who it was. Kind of made me say, you sure gypped that old lady? I said, what do you mean, gypped that old lady? He said, on that deal you made with her. I said, I didn't make it. She's the one wanting to trade. Mm. And I made the trade with her. It wasn't me. Who was that told me that? You don't remember who it was.
But, you know, years back, you could buy a good house for $4,000 or $5,000.
$2,000. And I bought that house and traded her, and I put that room on it back, and that only cost me $250 to put the room on it. And I sold it for $4,500. The day I moved, from Lawrenceburg, who was the first realtor? He brought a man down there and stopped there to see me about something. Oh, he had my house, and I was to give him the commission, that's the way it was. And this fella with him was from Lawrenceburg, was going out in the country looking at a place. And before he got out of there, he sold this man, and this house. What was his name? He didn't keep it very long until he sold it again. But that was a brand new house. That house was built in 37, I think it was.
Yeah, that house down there that...
This house was built in 37.
That Starks has lived in there. I lived in it, and that thing they told me was old man Wright built that and for $8,000.
Where was that at?
Earl Williams and them lived down on 4th and Mechanic. That's a good, well-built house in there. And he said that, did Leland Starks build that? He used to live in it.
I don't know.
He used to live there, and then during the Depression, the factory got low on money and everything, and that's when Earl Williams bought it. He got cheap during the Depression.
Skinny Edwards built this house.
Did he?
And he built that one over there.
Uh-huh.
And what did it cost? He built this house for $3,600, that's what he had in it. Well, when I sold that out for $4,500, they come right up. Mr. Licking had that big house for sale for $4,650, and I looked at it. It looked good. I started to walk across the living room floor. He said, don't walk across there. It's trouble. I said, what is it? Well, he said, the termites.
About ready to fall through the floor.
About ready to fall. All it was shell. And I didn't know what to do. Well, I wanted a house. My wife wanted it. It was a funny room. We liked it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even drew him down. Yeah. I gave him $4,600, I think it was, something like that. And I bought it. I had to tear up all the floor, put new joists, and new flooring. I put oak, hardwood oak in it. Skinny Edwards.
About ate up, huh?
Well, it completely ate up.
Can you remember anything about the mill up there at Iller and Myers? I was wondering how old that is.
Oh, Iller and Myers, my dad, that was the old Acme mill. My dad used to go there when I was a kid.
That's been there for years, hasn't it?
Been there, well, when I was a kid, been there 75 years or more.
Because when Tracy, my granddaughter, was here, I knew she'd never been in an old mill like that, and we went in there, and they let us go upstairs. You know, them stairs were wore so thin that you could see where just people, where their foot was. There was war so you could see through in places.
I got my fingers crossed one of these days.
Oh, that's a dangerous thing.
That'd go up in a...
It's got this little fine meal. You know, they got like cobwebs in there, and that dust would be up on them cobwebs.
I wouldn't want to have a place.
If you ever get a good spark going in there.
Well, Roman had that. But Dad used to buy flour and
I remember Romans. Yeah.
And Dad sold them wheat, and he got flour, so much flour in return for a lot of the wheat.
And I was talking to Bud Stagwell. He said that they used to have their old grocery over there on George Street, Stagwell.
Yeah, we used to sell them watermelon and stuff when I was a kid.
And then he said they'd buy a carload of stuff and they'd sell it to the other grocers, like potatoes. So they'd used to get a carload of potatoes, and there'd be a little stove in there that'd keep that stove going so the potatoes wouldn't freeze.
I remember, but why didn't know Bud was of that family, but Bud, Leo...
He said his dad...
Leo had it last.
He said his dad was in partnerships on the brickyard over there, too.
Yes, that's over there where the Waterway Park is.
Yeah.
That's where Harry Baldry lost a leg.
Yeah.
In the press over there.
Uh-huh.
I remember that, too.
And they would take that old creek bud and mash it, wash it all up, and then it had molds to make bricks out of it. They'd dry them out in the sun first, and then they'd put a fire to them and...
Kill, they call them.
Kill.
I've got a couple down in the basement. That's the roots one day. Come over here. Come in, carrying two bricks.
The roar bricks?
Yeah, she said, I thought maybe you'd want to keep these for posterity.
Uh-huh. I got a couple of them and made bookends out of them for one of the lawyers up there. And took them, put some kind of transparent sealer on them. But there's a lot of those bricks used in these buildings around town.
Who owned the building where you used to have the laundry?
The bank. Bank. I sold my half. See, that building was in two halves. I sold my half to the bank. And then Ritter...
I was thinking you were on this side of the...
On the bank side, we was.
He was bank side.
The other side was Ritter Tire, and of course they stayed in business for a while. And then when they quit business, I don't know who that fellow was, ran for a while, but the bank owns the whole thing now.
I asked Mrs. Haynes. I do business with her when I want to do any business with the bank, and I said, you think this was a good thing? Jarring up since then.
At Star? That? Star Bank? You mean the Star Bank?
Yeah, she said, well, it must be. They joined up with them.
Well, they got 151 or two banks together.
You know, the building alone has did the same thing?
No, have they gone in with somebody?
It's not in with Star. It's another organization they've joined up with.
Yeah, I know.
A bunch of building alones.
Peoples, you know, Peoples in Lawrenceburg, first they went with somebody, and now they're all in the Star.
Well, that's a bank, I mean, this is the building alone. They joined up in the paper a week or so ago.
I didn't know that they...
Yes, it's a financial outfit. They've got the money. I thought there was something wrong. Nobody said anything. Tuck and I was good friends for years because he was...
It's affordable, and this summer it's downright necessary. Williamson Central Air. Call your Williamson man. That's Ray Shuck at Shuck's Plumbing and Heating in Aurora for Williamson Central Air.
Hey, is it social or business luncheon? A dinner? A shower or regular rehearsal? A family or sports banquet? Try the private banquet immediately with the local meeting environment. The family atmosphere at the Delaware is more enhanced with the great food. The meeting rooms lend a private touch to your elegant room. Call the Delaware meeting environment at 812-654-9741 for information and reservations. Before or after the game, make your next stop the Delaware meeting environment.